Hello.
Hello.
Yes, I can see you.
Can you see me now? How do I sound?
Sounds good. I'm going to adjust the camera here so you can see more of us.
All right. Is Ben Stone in the room?
He is not, but he was supposed to be. I don't know. He wandered off. So
damn anarchists.
They're just so unreliable. Unpredictable. Cool.
Hey, is that Larkin Rose right there?
It is indeed.
Hey, Larkin.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going good.
You deleted your Facebook. I don't know if you can see.
Yeah, I deleted my CIA book. I'm no longer on there. Is that Nick? Hey, Nick.
Yeah, hey.
So, Larkin, you spoke and Ben Stone spoke. Has the Libertarian Party dissolved now?
Yes, in fact, it
not
much
loudly.
Did.
I said on our radio show today that if those two guys are speaking, the Libertarian Party is going to vote to dissolve at the end of the meeting. And Nima said, no, they won't vote. They'll just dissolve. Hey, Larkin, I want to get you some time on our radio show. The Fiends are syndicated on radio now. We're on five stations and adding more all the time. And one of them is a 50,000-watt station in North Dakota, Minnesota, and one is a 25,000-watt station in Wyoming. So we want to have you on sometime yakking. Nima says the call failed to Love Goes Home, not online. Is Love Goes Home offline, or has the Skype closed or something?
He's working on it.
Let's see. He's figuring it out.
Did you guys show the movie already? Or is it still
yes.
showing?
Yeah.
And how many people were there? You three?
There one, two, three, four, five, six of us now.
Cool.
Not everybody was here at the beginning, though, so it's pretty small, but we're going to have to do a better screening of this. I know... you had a great showing in Philly the Fringe Fest. What was it? It's the
sorry, we're in the test.
Forget what was that? The Independent Film Festival.
Yeah,
with Salvi. That was.
There was
good.
A cop there. I heard a cop was there and liked it.
I wonder who invited him. I don't know how that happened, but oh, nice.
Yeah. Can you say something real quick?
Are you talking to me?
Oh,
I hear Nima. Yeah.
Can you hear him?
I hear Nima, sort of. Yeah. I hear him in not over the internet, but I'm hearing him in the room you're in over the Skype mic.
Right.
Can you hear me, Nima?
Yeah, I can hear you, Michael. If you can hear me, I think that'll work. Quality's not great, but it'll work.
It's actually pretty good at this end, so thanks, guys.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we're using good mics. We're using the stuff we use for radio. See, this is the Electrovoice RE20 microphone, which is broadcast standard. I mean, I just like to talk about equipment and cats. I mean, I guess you guys want to talk about politics or something, but I like gear and cats. I'll get my cat. I want to show Larkin my cat. You like cats, Larkin, don't you? You cat guy?
We have three, yeah?
Yeah. I have three, and one of them is as big as three. I'll get it.
So that counts as five.
Ugh. Okay, this is Charlie. Charlie is 15 years old, and she caught a mouse recently. She kicks ass.
Charlie, say hi to the Libertarians. Charlie, you there? Okay, here we go. There we go. She doesn't care.
Cats are Libertarians. They're like, you're trying to get me to do something. I don't want to do it. Here, go ahead, Charlie.
Speaking of, you... in Wyoming, I think, right?
Yes, I am in Casper, Wyoming, and Nima's in Nima lives in Austin, but today he's in Salt Lake City or outside of it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm away from home.
Wyoming seems to be the real free state project, rather than in-your-face liberty activism. It's kind of more of a leave me alone. That's kind of cool.
I wouldn't say the real anything over anything else, and I'm always I'm sure that there are people here who would love that you said that. Let me record this. But they're very different. The Free State Wyoming Project is smaller. It's probably 300 people in state. They're far less activists. I'm not a member of them. I'm kind of an honorary member or a friend, I guess, friend of the Free State Project. They don't really do a lot of media. I mean, I'm on the radio here, and I'm not even a member of them. I'm the Ian Freeman of their movement without even being in their movement. And I don't think they would agree with that either, because I certainly don't think they would think I represent them. I don't attend a lot of stuff. I'm not really a, like, go places in person kind of guy. Like, I've built this empire of my home that You know, I believe basically the thing of like home is where the rights are. You have the most rights you ever have in your home. And so I don't like leaving my home. I'm not a hermit. Like I went out shooting yesterday. I drove 30 miles by myself, all by myself out into the sticks and went shooting. But, you know, I'm not really a get out there kind of guy. I like being at home where it's, you know, I'm a control freak of my own world. I just want to control my own little entity. So I'm not really, they're all outdoorsy types. They go hunting, they go camping. Like I didn't go to their hootenanny this year. They also are really privacy, I wouldn't say freaks, but like if you went to a Free State Wyoming event and started videotaping, people be like, why are you videotaping? And where are you going to use this? And if you pulled out a video camera at the Free State New Hampshire event, they'd be like, oh, another person of 300 that are videotaping this, you know, and they'd want to know what kind of camera you have instead of why are you filming us, you know? So I think in a way, their goals are very different and they're activist. They're not really activists. They're more like you said, like leave me alone. And they don't want to, I mean, it's hard to speak of people collectively, but overall, like there isn't a radio station. There isn't, you know, like they're a bunch of ham radio operators. Like they don't want to broadcast to the public. They want to be able to, speak to people hundreds of miles away in the event of a natural disaster kind of thing. So does that answer, I guess?
It does. Little side note, is there any way you could message Nima and tell him that I'm getting him back on right now?
Okay. Yeah.
Slightly crashed.
Yeah, I tapped a plug and the computer fell off the ledge. We have it on here. And sorry about that.
That's all right.
So just give me a second. I have some questions for both of you, but I mean,
okay.
Keep talking. I'm
I just want to talk to Larkin.
Oh, okay.
What's up, Larkin?
Well, he's right here.
So, Larkin, did you speak there yet?
Yep, I did breakfast, and they didn't lynch me. So
okay. Well, I find it interesting that the Libertarian Party invited you and Ben Stone to speak because you're both non-voting guys, like and us. Like, you're having four. I don't know how many speakers they had, but I guess if Nima and I are speakers, you're having four people who say don't vote. Voting's dumb at the Libertarian Party.
It's because they were dumb enough to have Jim Babb organize.
They're like, you know what? He's willing to do it all, so just let him do it. He'll get speakers that are libertarian, sure. So I just went for the most hardcore I can get on our budget.
Well, I said today on our radio show that the Libertarian Party is a great idea, but it's kind of an organization that is not designed to go on forever because basically it educates people to become libertarian or recognize that they're libertarian. I don't think you can educate anyone to be libertarian. I think you're either a person who wants to control people or you are into liberty. And when you hear about libertarianism, you go, oh, I've been like that my whole life. How can I learn more? Libertarian Party's great for that, but the better of a libertarian you become, the less you want to be involved in politics. So it's kind
of... And you just fall out of the game.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good for
it. And then start doing YouTube videos.
You know, the Libertarian Party for you know is a landing place for certain people that they first start hearing about these ideas.
Yeah.
And if I can be sure that I've got people like Larkin around, you know, to help them get the proper ideas from the get go, it saves a lot of time later. You know, I mean, it really does. So.
Yeah, I used to be a Libertarian Republican, whatever that is. I was the Wyoming chair for the Republican Liberty Caucus, which are kind of the. I'm sure you know who they are. They're the. The Libertarian Party people who decided about 15 years ago, well, this party's never going to do anything. We have to infiltrate the Republicans. And, you know, they do a good job at it, but it's still, I don't know, let's not talk about voting versus non-voting. People have their own opinions and ideas. And I believe the thing of, like, government does things really bad, so does that mean government should only do really important things, which to me is politics. So let's talk about anything else and our wonderful movie. And is Nima there yet?
He's about to be.
Yeah.
One sec. Can you ask him to call me again? We actually just got... Oh, wait, here he is. Now I'm seeing him as not... Oh, hold on. Hotel internet.
How many libertarians does it take to do a video chat?
Apparently, it depends which ones.
Yeah.
We had
trying
for a minute.
So, while you're trying to get Nima on, I did message him and say they're trying. Did you have a question about the movie?
I got one.
Yes. Larkin?
Since it came out, I mean, I've seen it several times now. Since it came out, have you noticed any number of people in the gun rights camp and in the drug rights camp, or whatever you want to call it, figuring out that they... Have you seen more people figuring out that they should be buddies with each other because it's the same principle?
It's hard to tell when you put media out in the world. I always say that art becomes media once it leaves your bedroom, and it's kind of like throwing a message into a bottle. And when I was 12, I actually put a message in a bottle and threw it into Lake Erie in Westfield, New York, and somebody found it in Buffalo, like 70 miles away, and wrote to me. I had, or called me, and we actually got... I got in the local paper when I was 12 because I threw a message in a bottle and someone actually answered it. And that's kind of been, it was really important for me later in how I do art. I just throw it out there and whatever happens, happens. Of course, you know, you get feedback, you get YouTube comments, you get emails. I have gotten emails from 4 or 5 people who were specifically in one camp, saw the movie, and then immediately got it and were like, okay, all rights are the same rights. All rights are interconnected. There's no such thing as half free. But I also think about how many people see... I mean, it's had, you know, 24,000 views or whatever on Facebook, and it's had a bunch of downloads on BitTorrent, and we've sold, you know, about 550 copies of the DVD. So who knows how many people have seen it? And there have been a lot of showings of it at events. People write all the time and say, hey, can I show it? You know, everything from in their living room to their 5 friends or to, you know, showing to 300 people at a film festival. And I always say yes. I never say give me money. I never say these are my demands. You know, Neem and I always, if someone asks, we're like, yeah. But I also think about how much cool media I see that I never contact the people about. So I don't really know. Like, I think the only reason I ever contacted you, Larkin, and I love your stuff and I pimp it all the time and tell people they should check it out, but the only reason I ever initially contacted you was I the same reason I contacted Ben Stone the first time, which was, you know, you guys do great stuff, but your audio could be better. I can help you, and gave you tips and tried to help you out. And really, I'm such a busybody and such an audio Nazi, I guess, is, I don't know, audio perfectionist, that now that I've perfected my audio, I want to perfect everyone else in Liberty's audio. So that's the only reason I ever contacted you. But think about, you know, the thousands of pieces of media we've consumed in our lives that we've never sent a fan letter. You know, like, I love Pink Floyd, but I've never written a fan letter to Roger Waters. So,
right. Yeah, knows? And I think there's, I think, you know, you mentioned 5 people pointed out that they were on one side or the other and said, yeah, now I get it. I think those 5 people probably represent a heck of a lot more than 5. I mean, every store knows that if 3 people complain about something,
yeah,
1,000 were mad about it, but only 3 thought to say anything.
Yeah, so and who knows who those 5 people told. I mean, that's the ripple effect. That's the message in the bottle. You know, there was this ad when I was a kid. I think, how old are you, Larkin?
I'm not telling. 44.
44? Okay, I'm 49. You might remember this ad, you might not, from when I was a kid. Maybe it was gone when you were a kid, but it was for like a lady's hair care product or shampoo or something. And the tagline was, and she told 2 friends, and they told 2 friends,
yeah,
and they told 2 friends. And it was basically talking about pre-internet viral friend-to-friend marketing and how it works. And I always tell that whenever people write me and say, hey, I really like your movie, man, or I really like your podcast, I usually answer their questions and then just say, thanks, tell 2 friends. That's like, it could almost be a cut-and-paste sig line, but it's not. And really, the tell 2 friends thing is how you change the world, I think.
Yep.
You make something that resonates not with everybody, but with enough people that they can they will want to tell 2 friends, you know? And a lot of times I make media and people have notes for me, like they're my producer, like I don't even know them, and they write to me and they're like, hey, I really liked gun training with the non-aggression principle, but you shouldn't have put that punk rock song in there because it's going to turn people off. And I'm thinking, like, there's all sorts of gun training media out there, and this isn't for everybody. And there's stuff that's out there for everybody, and I didn't make that for them. So, you know, I always figure you make the art you want to make that makes you chuckle or think or scratch your own chin in your bedroom, and then you throw it out in the world. It leaves your bedroom and goes from being art to being media the minute it leaves your desktop. And then it's up to the universe, really. Like, no matter what promotion you do or don't, people are going to spread it or not.
Yeah. So what made you both decide that you wanted to choose your art to be focused on guns and weed specifically? Because there's kind of a rift between, I hate to call it the left and the right, but there are, like, you know, the quote-unquote hippies on the one end that are trying to stand up for drug legalization, decriminalization. They're opposed to the drug war. And then there's the people on the right that are really against gun laws. And there's like a rift between the two, but what it really comes down to is a root of self-ownership. So
exactly. I mean, you answered the question of why we did it, but the roots of it, there's a writer named Robert Anton Wilson, weird sci-fi writer, libertarian anarchist guy from the 60s and 70s and 80s, who actually came up with a joke called the Guns and Dope Party. And he said, I think this was before the Libertarian Party, or it might have been a reaction to the first beginnings of it, but this was really like late 60s, early 70s. He said, if everyone in California who loves guns and everyone in California who loves drugs got together and formed a political party, they would be a majority in California. And he was right. And he took it even further. He made jokes about, like, replacing one third of Congress with ostriches would be a good move, things like that, which I kind of liked as political theater or as, what do you call it? Performance art, I guess. But I don't do drugs. I used to do a lot of drugs. I got sober, you know, going to meetings in 94, and I've been sober since. But I really got, and I never really thought that much about drug laws, and I didn't own guns until about 7 years ago. But my only child died of cancer. My daughter Amelia died in 2006 at age 24 of cancer, and she never did drugs. She never smoked pot. She was a self-described good girl. You know, she had good grades. She went to church. She didn't hang with the weed crowd. When she got cancer and started doing chemo, a doctor told her to smoke pot. And the state that she was in did not have any kind of medical marijuana thing. No states really did then. And, the state she did, you know, basically a doctor told her to break the law to get some comfort. And she did. And she smoked pot. And I started thinking about the fact that politicians write laws that could throw my baby girl in prison for trying to feel less hellish while dying of cancer. And that made me just adamantly hate anti-drug laws. And then a little while later, someone tried to break into our house and we ended up buying guns. And then suddenly realized we own guns in California. We have to be very careful how we own them and carry them and bring them to and from our home in the car, or we could go to prison. And that seemed ridiculous to me. So I was kind of a pot activist and a gun activist, and then was still like into politics, but then basically became libertarian and then became anarchist and anarcho-capitalist. And it just seemed a good way to tie it together to make a documentary that covered both. And the tagline of the movie is there's no such thing as half free. And that basically is what it is that we're trying to portray, not to unite the right and left, but to show them why you can't be a single issue person. I mean, single issue pot activism, decades of it has led to, like, there's a couple states where you can buy a joint from the government. And there's, a half dozen states or a dozen states where if you're dying of cancer and you pay for a license, they'll let you buy some weed basically from the government. And you know, decades and decades and decades of gun activism has led to probably more infringement on the Second Amendment, not less. So, and then things like, you know, Eric Holder using the war on drugs to take away gun rights, things like that. It just really started to gel, and that's why we made the movie.
Now, what about you, Nima? I mean, you said you're in Austin and you're in Wyoming. How do you two know each other? What's your collaborative process like, and how did you get into these issues?
Right.
And decide to make a movie together.
I Own Me, not a movie, a music video called I Own Me, when I was working for a TV station in Riverton, Wyoming. And Michael saw that and really immediately contacted me, wanted to work with me. And I moved to Casper, met up with him. He invited me over for some buffalo chili or some kind of dinner. And we just hit it off. He immediately wanted to make media with me. You know, I was like, hey, you can help me with my rap album. He was like, nah, let's do something else. Let's do a movie. And he originally wanted it to be like Libertarianism 101, basically explaining the non-aggression principle, property rights, the fact that you own yourself. And we started off, worked on a little bit of music, and I had a rap line where I said, you know, I want my guns and my women. So that was kind of my mentality then, because, you know, freedom is one thing. You know, people say, well, you know, what about the government taking your freedoms, or the government is infringing on this freedom and that freedom? And I was like, no, there's freedom or not. It's a binary thing. It's either freedom or lack of freedom. And we really grasped onto the guns and weed thing because the anti-drug war people, they get it right a lot of the time. And the anti-gun war people also get it right a lot of the time. And they just don't universalize that principle to the opposition. And so we thought this would be a great example of, hey, the things you think about the drug war, those are right on. You just got to spread that to everything else, every other sphere of public life, and realize that freedom's one thing. And then I think Michael looked for the domain name, gunsandweeds.com, and noticed that it was free, and immediately was like, that was it. That's the title of the movie. Let's go forward with it. We'll make that the theme.
So what were the steps that you both took to make the movie? Like, I'm sure you have some sort of collaborative process. Did you both write down ideas and send them to each other?
We were in the same room. We were in the same room when we did it.
Yeah. At that time, I was working in Wyoming. I was working for KTTV, yeah. ABC affiliate. And so after work, I would go straight to Michael's house. He'd have a stack of, like, notes, and we would just go over them. We would talk about the ideas, come up with concepts. We really wanted it to be little segments, the short segments that were poppy. So I think these days, kids want to see things that move real fast.
Also, it's available on YouTube in segments that seem to be organized in a manner that is kind of poppy, as you put it.
Yeah, and part of the reason it's only in segments and not up as one long thing on YouTube was at the time I didn't have a powerful enough computer to render a high-def 99-minute movie without doing it in segments. It kept crashing, so we just did it in segments and it worked.
Would you say that it worked to your advantage or to a disadvantage of what your idea of what the film was going to be presented as was?
I don't think it really mattered, but it probably helped us with advertising money because there's ads on each one of them. So, there wasn't a plan. It just worked out that way.
That's cool. Okay. My favorite line in the movie is, without guns, laws are merely suggestions. That line always really stuck out.
And that's said by, what's his name, Nima?
Shane Sheed,
who is another Libertarian Party refugee who became an anarcho-capitalist, which, you know, it seems like the natural progression. Larkin Rose once said, we do this all the time. It's kind of weird that he's in the room right now, but we do this all the time on our podcast and on our radio show. Larkin Rose once said that, you know, I asked him what his journey to liberty was, and he basically said something like, you know, I became a small government conservative and then kept questioning single issues or single points where, like, it didn't compute because I was saying, you know, any government aggression is wrong, but the government should do this because it's important, and the path just gets more and more narrow to the point where if you're ethical and logical and don't lie to yourself, you have to end up saying, I may not know the answer, but it's absolutely not any government, which is kind of where I am. I don't claim to have an answer, really, but I know it's not violence. I know it's not government aggression.
You're still a minarchist. It wasn't until a year later when we were really doing the podcast and having the discussions that you realized that you can't really have what we conceive of as a state now and still be 100% true to the non-aggression principle.
Yeah, Nima brainwashed me. I was a minarchist for the first 10 episodes of the Freedom Fiends, probably. We're up to episode 220 now or something, and yeah, the first 10 of them are still up online if you want to hear me defending the state.
Michael.
Yes.
We have a hooligan, Jim Bovar, just dropped in on us here. Say hi.
Oh, awesome.
Hey, how are
Jim.
You?
You're Howdy.
Familiar?
Oh,
do you all know each other?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
okay.
Cool. Yeah, he wrote Public Policy Hooligan, his memoirs. I've read his articles on Lou Rockwell, and I've heard him interviewed by Scott Horton a lot. And I think Jim Bovard is an amazing guy, and it's awesome, an honor to have him listening to me. I mean, that's amazing.
Well, nice.
Excellent.
Nice to hear you. Nice to see among all these hardliners here.
Well,
not like Maryland.
On that note, what are you two working on now? I know you both have a pretty successful podcast. Do you guys want to talk about stuff you have in the works? Or
we're just doing radio now. We got syndicated on Genesis Communications Network, the people that syndicate Alex Jones and Free Talk Live, a month ago. It took about 6 months of back and forth to before it actually happened. And we had to buy a whole bunch of equipment, which is back here. You probably can't see it, but went into debt buying about $5,000 worth of equipment to be able to syndicate from home, from our homes, from different locations and have it sound good. And we're on 5 radio stations now. And basically, I get up every morning now and spend about 4 hours calling. I'm going through the list of like 900 talk radio stations in America and saying, hi, you don't know me, but Libertarian radio show, you want to put us on? And so far, 5 brave program directors have put us on, and it's pretty darn cool, man. I've always wanted to be on radio. It's been a dream of mine since I was about 9, and so for 40 years, I've wanted to do it, and we're finally doing it, and that pretty much takes all of my time. Nima's building a family and taking lots of vacations. He takes more vacations than Barack Obama, I think.
Is that possible? okay, now you both talk about, you're talking about being on radio now, but I know you make rap music, you have albums out, and you were in a alternative band, for lack of a better term. I know you did a lot of touring back in the early 90s and stuff. So when you talk about being on radio, did you always have dreams, both of you, of being on radio as personalities or as musicians or both?
My band was on radio a bit. We were on Warner Brothers, and we weren't very successful on Warner Brothers, but major labels get you on radio, so our music was on radio for a minute in the early 90s. But no, I think my earliest dreams were of being some kind of personality. Like when I was 8 or 9, I built a little FM transmitter that transmitted like, you know, 100 yards or something, and I built it into the handset of an old telephone. And I would walk around my neighborhood talking into it. And I don't know if anyone ever heard it, but the thought that maybe they could have seemed like I was communicating with God or with the universe somehow. And the neighbors thought I was nuts. Like, oh, there's little Michael playing with a broken telephone. But they didn't know that I was actually, they could hear me on the radio if they turned it on. But my dad had a reel-to-reel tape recorder. I used to go into a closet because it had better acoustics, because it had clothes in there that soaked up the echo, and I would go in there and like kind of practice interviewing myself, which probably sounds like insane monomania, but I guess to be a talk show host or any kind of like, I want the world to hear my valuable thoughts, you have to have a little bit of that in you. Nima?
There's a little room on radio for talk alternative viewpoints rather than alternative viewpoints in music. The music that gets a lot of radio play has to be kind of lowest common denominator. You know, party and my broken heart and I'm a lord, that kind of stuff.
Go to work, get drunk, go to the bar after work.
There's Free Talk Live. They've got 117 affiliates. You know, Alex Jones.
I was just going to ask. You're both in radio and you're so into radio. Do you listen to a lot of these podcasts? Are you active podcast listeners? Or, like, were you inspired by their work and that makes you want to do your own podcast? How into the whole talk radio thing are you guys, or is it just something that you do because you want to be heard?
I'm a big consumer of talk radio and podcasts. When I was working at a TV station in Washington State and feeling really beat down by the stories I had to tell and was required to tell by my news director, I would listen to Free Talk Live, and it kind of kept me sane. When I was in the car driving to and from interviewing government officials about how great the state was, I would listen to Free Talk Live and realize, hey, there's other people out there, you know, and I felt connected to that. You know, nowadays when I'm working, when I'm driving, I often listen to Scott Horton. He's probably my favorite radio personality out there. I listen to Stefan Molyneux. I listen to Free Talk Live. And I really like to sit there and consume media that makes me think. And sometimes it just confirms my bias, but it definitely feels good. And so that definitely colors the way I feel about talk radio and the way I feel about my own community.
I listen to Ben Stone and Larkin Rose, and that's pretty much it. I listen actually to a lot of the tired old bloviating right-wingers because they're at the top of their game, and I want to knock them off their throne and take their spot. kind of the same way that, like, when I was in a band, you know, I didn't really like Aerosmith or Boston or, you know, any of those 80s bands, but I listened to them not to try to figure out how to copy them, but to figure out what they had in, what makes them, what they did that made them have the position they have. Because I really, literally, like, I want to take Rush Limbaugh's slots. I want to take Glenn Beck's slots. So I've been listening to as much of that as I can without screaming and throwing things at the wall. And actually, a couple, we've already replaced them in a couple places, and that's been a really big coup for me. Like, one of the stations is, one of the stations would come on right after Rush's Week in Review, and we actually did a bumper for the station that they play during his show that says, "Stick around after Rush's Week in Review for the Freedom Fiends," which I get a huge kick out of. I listen to it streaming delayed on their show, and I love it. Someone is taking Fox News off the air in Colorado and starting us in that slot next week. And somebody has taken, starting tomorrow, someone has taken, we're taking G. Gordon Liddy's spot. He retired, but we're taking his spot, which is really cool. And somebody else is considering taking off Glenn Beck, like, Week in Review, his replays on Saturdays, and giving us two of those 3 hours. So it's already happening. I already feel like we are taking that over. And there's a lot of talk radio that claims to be cutting edge but isn't. I mean, there's a guy who says, "Not your dad's talk radio," which we actually have as a bumper, but someone pointed out someone was already using that. And I listen to the guy, and the thing is, it is my dad's talk radio. I mean, he's talking, it's the small government conservative, "Obama is the problem, Republicans can save us, Constitution, blah, blah, blah." He's just got a younger attitude about it, but that's still my dad's talk radio gussied up in a kind of punk rock attitude. So I really think there are only, including us, three talk radio shows that have any national syndication that are not your dad's talk radio, and it's us, Alex Jones, and Free Talk Live. Alex Jones is his own thing, and I disagree with about half of what he says, and about half of what he says is the only, it's true, and it's the only people saying it. But he's kind of upsetting to me to listen to him. I get really like, ah, whereas that doesn't help me, you know? So, and, you know, Free Talk Live are basically the only people who are talking about the non-aggression principle, and they helped us get on radio, which is really cool. They're kind of our big brothers, or like our AA sponsors, you know?
Are you guys syndicated with LRN.FM?
Yeah.
You are? Okay.
Well, we've been syndicated with them for a year and a half, doing a show live to a show clock, which is how radio's done. It was really good, like, training wheels for being on radio. Like, the people at GCN, the board ops there, the technicians that we connect with that actually sit there during our show and move volumes up and down and be ready to hit the cuss delay button if we cuss, those guys were just amazed. They were like, "Man, we've never had a new show that does, you know, we don't have to explain to them what a Comrex is. We don't have to explain what a cuss dump is. We don't let, you know," and we sounded good, like, right out the gate and knew how to deal with a show clock. So Ian Freeman's Liberty Radio Network is kind of like the farm team for real radio.
That's cool. So will we be seeing you at ForkFest?
Nah.
It's not hopeful. No.
Not this year.
Not this year. I didn't see you both at ForkFest last year either.
Yeah, it's really far from us.
My it is really far. Yeah,
for a lot of states that don't let him legally carry weapons, that would be on his way. He also doesn't like to fly. I
don't
like
to fly.
But I'm really busy. You know, my wife's pregnant. We're gonna be having a baby here soon.
Congratulations.
We've got a lot of work to do with our own home.
Okay.
She loves the area. She wants to visit one time. So maybe next year or the year after. It's definitely a goal.
Cool. I had a question from an audience member. I think it was for you, Michael. You had mentioned something about working in Philadelphia with music.
I went to a boarding school in Paoli, Pennsylvania, Exton, Lancaster area. I lived there for 4 years. So I lived in the area when I was a teenager. I actually got kicked out of the school. It was called the Church Farm School. It's now called the school at Church Farm. I got kicked out of there for calling the headmaster a fat, bald, overly Christian old fart. But and now I'm kind of fat and kind of balding. So, but I'm not an old fart. So yeah, but I've played, my band Bomb, the one that was on Warner Brothers, played in Philly. We played at a place called, I think it was Khyber Pass. Is that still there?
Yeah. It's not called that anymore. It was just the Khyber for a while. I think it's changed hands since then.
They changed the name because it sounds terrorist now. Bomb at the Khyber Pass. Yeah.
Bomb.
That's a good point.
I never worked in the music industry there, if that's what they were asking. I just drove through and played and left.
Wasn't he a reporter in Philadelphia?
Well, Nemo, were you a reporter in Philadelphia?
No. I was a reporter in Wyoming, two different cities there, and in Washington State.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, do you guys have anything else that you want to talk about that you're working on these days? Any Liberty projects that you're excited about that other people are doing? Comment?
I don't care what other people are doing.
Okay.
I kind of don't. I mean, that sounds kind of callous, but it's like the way that I'm able to do the output I do of, like, you know, having written 10 books, having done like 12 records, having done, you know, 5 movies, and doing radio shows all week, all the time. Basically, the only way I'm able to do it is by not paying attention to the rest of the world. And that sounds cold and callous, but it's not. It's like I see stuff that I know it's great, and I celebrate it, and I pimp it, like Ben stuff and like Larkin stuff. But I don't have much time for it. Nima probably spends more time with it than I do. I don't know. Do you, Nima?
I mean, I consume a lot of Liberty Media, and I wouldn't say I don't care about what other people are doing. I like to see great projects, and we talk about them on our radio show, like the Robin Hood folks up in Keene. I mean, I thought that was an excellent thing that they're doing.
I have taken part in that, actually, when I lived in Keene, doing the Robin Hood activism, and it's one of... I mean, you're directly helping someone. It's fun. You're breaking the rules. You're harassing bureaucrats. It's like the perfect liberty activism package. It really is.
And I think there's a lot of niches and roles that people can play in the Liberty Mission or the Liberty Movement, and that's definitely an important one. Me and Michael like to make media. We think that's where we fit in for the whole thing. And so, yeah, the radio thing's really important. I think it's really important to get these news out there over the airwaves that people can hear on their AM radio while they're driving across the country or on a road trip or at work, wherever they listen to radio at. I'm also still working on liberty-oriented hip-hop. You know, I was working on an album that's kind of on hiatus, but I've got some songs I'm working on now that I intend to make more videos for, to put those out there, you know, just to get the word out there in as many venues as possible, at least the venues that me and Michael are good at. And Michael definitely helps me out with that. You know, he sings backup or will play a bass line when I need to play a bass line. So I'd like to continue doing that. You know, do video whenever it's good, you know, whenever video furthers a story or an issue, I plan on doing that. But audio is just so much easier, so much more prolific with the tools that we have.
Okay.
Yeah, I retired as a filmmaker last week. I announced it on the air. It's so much work, man. Video files are so big, it takes so long to render. I like audio. And tell Ben Stone he's a weenie for not being in on this.
I will do that. Thanks. Actually, I've heard that sentiment expressed by several people here.
So. Where is he? What's he doing that's so important?
I don't know. I had to leave his speech, actually, to come up here and do this, and he was supposed to come up afterwards, so that I can't tell you.
He's a weenie.
Yeah, I don't personally have any more questions for the two of you. I think you both summed up what you've been working on and what you were going for with the film and everything pretty well, but does anybody have any questions?
Keep up the great work.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, I mean... Cool, man. I'd love to open this up to everyone, but apparently you guys just express yourselves so well that you don't have to do that. So
well, we're honored to have been invited, and it looks fun, man. It looks like the Russian tea room. I wish I were there.
Oh yeah, and it has been nice staying here, definitely.
All right, man. Take care, y'all.
It's pretty cool is here, except for you guys.
We're gonna go edit some audio. We got to put up the show that we did today, and I'm gonna put this up as an Anarchy Gumbo in a few days. I recorded this.
That was I didn't want to bring it up because I couldn't remember the name of your late night podcast. Tell us about that a little bit, because
it's an interview show. Because people always ask to be interviewed on the Freedom Fiends, and we kind of don't like to do that because we like the sound of our own voices so much. So I started another cast called Anarchy Gumbo. It's kittyfeet.com, like the feet of a cat. Kittyfeet.com. And I did an interview with Larkin. I've done a couple interviews with Ben Stone on there and Ian Freeman from Free Talk Live and about 40 other people. So, yeah, that's where we store our interviews. And I have been kind of lax about doing it because I've been so busy with radio. But I'm going to put the recording of this talk session up, this question and answer session up as an episode. So, yeah.
Awesome. Perfect. Real quick, I wanted to let you know something about the Kitty Feet website.
Yeah.
That apparently is blocked at my workplace because
it's
they implies pornography.
Oh, really?
Kitty Feet. Yeah. So
really?
So IT department has blocked it at my work.
It's blocked
so
at Starbucks too. It's blocked at Starbucks.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's weird. I guess kitty feet is a sex act I've never heard of, but
Nah,
man, I just like cats. It was my first domain name, and I registered it in like 1996, and you know it was kind of my blog before there was blogging software. But yeah, it's just a website. I was gonna let it expire, but I'm like, I've had this 15 years, so when I wanted to, that's why Anarchy Gumbo is not anarchygumbo.com. It's kittyfeet.com because I had the domain.
Okay, so if we're talking about why things are called what they're called, the way that you sign your emails, I've noticed, is the closing greeting that you use is worms.
You want to take this, Nima?
it's your story.
Why is it that you sign your emails worms? Because I like it. I think it's great. But, you know, is there a story behind it? Is it random? Is it... Okay.
It's definitely a story. I'll let Michael tell it. Michael,
he wants to let you tell it.
I'll tell it real quick. It's kind of making fun of how people say word, you know, which was like a 1982. It was a hip hop thing, and it was already like square and old fashioned in 1982. So, whenever anyone says word, unless they're being ironic, they're not hip. My friend David Immergluck started saying worms to make fun of that. He played in my band Slish, and he's in Counting Crows now. That really, I call them Counting Sheep. They're really, really, really boring and make me sleepy. But yeah, David Immergluck made that up. And we just like it. We like saying worms. And we coined a bunch. We use that and we coined a bunch of other phrases. There's actually a glossary on the Fiend site of all the weird words we use if anyone ever doesn't know what something is.
Okay, I didn't know if it was like a punk thing. I know you're friends with Lydia Lunch and some people from the early punk scene and stuff. So...
Hang on, I gotta come back.
Oh, okay. Nice setup.
Yep.